Welcome back to the Drafting Table Podcast, hosted by Dominion Due Diligence Group. You've got Daniel Walton here, and I have Ryan Hayner, the director of our Arc and Cost department, and we're going to be talking about changes associated with the 2020 map guide and how it's going to impact your processing of 223F, specifically in most cases heavy Fs, and D4 sub-rehab and new construction projects. So Ryan, thanks for taking some time to get information to me and the rest of the industry for the webinar and taking some time today. Really appreciate it. So how you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. I guess we'll jump right into this, not waste anyone's time. There's not a fortunately, there's not a lot of huge changes to the Arc and Cost world in terms of the 2020 map guide, but there are still a few important points that we wanted to bring to your attention because it will impact a few different checkpoints along the way. So we're going to kind of cover it, the process, the way we cover the process, which starting with changes to the inspection, followed by changes to the reporting, the CNAE tool, and the forms needed, as well as impacts from tax credits. Then we're going to talk about forms and agreements, changes there. Then we'll shift into the cost review, a couple little tweaks there, and then get to some odds and ends that kind of popped up throughout the map guide. So let's start with the inspection process. Previously, it was very similar to a capital needs assessment inspection where we had to make sure we were meeting the 25% inspection requirements. Ryan, it sounds like some things have changed. If you wouldn't mind kind of explaining the difference between the 2016 and the 2020 map guide in terms of inspection.
Yeah, absolutely. So in the new map guide, the reference to gut rehabilitation has largely been removed, and everything is either classified as a new construction or a sub-rehab project. So if an architect previously qualified a development as gut rehab, it was treated like a new construction project, both in terms of the A&E review and the needs assessment. So for D4 new construction, you know, obviously there's not a needs assessment inspection because there are no existing structures to inspect. Gut rehab was lumped into that category. We kind of let the dust settle a little bit before asking for some clarification, and we did reach out to HUD, of course, and they were nice enough to let us know that because everything now is lumped as a sub-rehabilitation, regardless of the extent of the rehab, HUD still wants confirmation that areas of the project that are to remain are in a condition to be kept. And they'd like anything to be identified as far as existing conditions go that the development team needs to be aware of. So moving forward, even if the development is categorized as a gut rehab, a joint site inspection and a needs assessment inspection will be required. And of course, those items will translate into the e-tool. For the purposes of the e-tool, we can kind of discuss both the gut and the sub-rehab under the same umbrella. Luckily, this time around, we're not bounded by the 25% inspection density rule, for example, that 223F refinance projects have. Typically, for these types of substantial rehabilitations or gut rehab or adaptive reuse, the development team's done an extensive walkthrough. They've typically outlined the scope of work. So going into all those units that we would need to do for a refinance are really unnecessary here. So that is good news for sure. But like I said, a needs assessment, a joint site inspection is still required for gut rehab and substantial rehabilitation project.
Yeah, that's it really makes a lot of sense. It's applying logic, which is nice to see. It made no sense to make sure you're getting your head into 25% of the units, looking at flooring and cabinets and kitchen appliances, and all these things are going to be gone in a matter of a few months. And we really had to follow a prescriptive approach to getting that information. So now that we can go with more of the joint site visit approach, kind of how it used to be prior to the e-tool, that's going to be nice because now our representative gets to spend time on the property with the architect or the developer, the owner, the lender, and we can talk about what's going to happen at this property and make sure it all makes sense. So that definitely is nice to hear. I understand that there are some forms that have changed in regarding like the 2328 and how that's incorporated into the e-tool. That's always been something from a processing standpoint on our end that's been a challenge because the 2328 changes frequently. No two developer or lender kind of completes the 2328 the same way. So if you could tell us about some of those changes with how we're going to be incorporating the 2328, I think that's going to be another positive change for the industry.
Sure. And I'm going to jump around a little bit when I reference some of the HUD programs. We can start with the 223F, the heavy 223F projects without new LIHTC. The 2328 is no longer used to present construction costs in this case. Construction costs are now required to be delivered in the form of contractor bids. I don't think HUD felt that the 2328 was an appropriate format to incorporate into the e-tool. So for these 223F, these heavy F projects, the scope of work still does need to be incorporated in the CNA e-tool as either critical or not critical repairs, trying to itemize those individually as much as possible. And then hard costs only for that. All of the soft costs are going to be separated out and included on the lender's 223F repair and alterations worksheet. So for a 223F or a heavy F project, we're not using the 2328, but we still have to incorporate the contractor bids for the scope of work as critical or non-critical repairs. Those construction items, so to speak, are still itemized in the e-tool itself. Okay. Now, as we move over to D4 sub-rehab, 221 D4 projects, the 2328 is still required to present the construction costs. But the CNA e-tool should not describe or itemize any of that construction work as critical or non-critical repairs. It's simply for preparing a post-construction reserve for replacement schedule to reflect future repairs and replacements. So that's a big difference between the two. You still do need a needs assessment and an e-tool for 221 D4 sub-rehab, but you're just not incorporating the construction costs as not critical repairs, and that's the main difference between the new map guide and the old map guide.
Yeah, thanks for the clarity on that. And that's, you know, we've only been dealing with the new map guide for a little over a month now. This podcast is being recorded in early February 2021. But one of the questions and one of these misconceptions I'm seeing from a lot of the lenders is that, oh, great, I don't have to do a capital needs assessment anymore. That's one less thing we have to worry about. And that's just not the case. Really, we still have to complete the e-tool. In most of these cases, we have to incorporate the repair scope. We have to populate all the data. We have to create the property. We have to do the 20-year RR. There's really just a couple pieces that we don't have to do within the e-tool platform anymore. And that's the narrative. That's no longer there. The repairs have kind of shifted from repairs into the rehab scope of work, which is still kind of reflected in the 20-year RR process. You definitely aren't off the hook on getting a CNA if you have a heavy F or if tax credits are involved or if you're doing a sub-rehab. We still have to very much do the capital needs assessment. And any project that does have tax credits, and when we say tax credits, we mean new tax credits, meaning they're applying for a new 4 or 9% application. In those cases, you're probably going to need a capital needs assessment for the state submission. There could be other types of bonds, municipal grants, whatever other layers are going into your financial application. They're probably going to need a written, you know, typical old school capital needs assessment. So it's been scaled back a little bit, but the effort still goes into it. So you're not off the hook on the CNA. But I think there's also been a couple minor tweaks to some forms and agreements that, you know, a lot of HUD experienced, you know, HUD veteran architects and developers are used to that have changed a little bit. Can you talk to us a little bit about that, that B108 that everyone likes to forget about?
Absolutely. Yeah. The B108 is really just the owner architect agreement. And the type of agreement that is used is slightly different between the 223F heavy F platform and the D4 platform. You're either going to use the B108, which is for D4 projects, or you're going to use the B104 for 223 heavy F projects. And really the only difference is that the B104 is just intended for use on construction projects of limited scope or complexity. So that's kind of why it was chosen for the 223F heavy F platform. But it's really just a compressed form of the B108 itself, of the basic services within three phases: the design, construction documents, and the actual construction itself. So it's really just a compressed version. There's always been a lot of confusion on that. The new map guide, however, does say that you can use the B108 for 223F heavy F projects that have an extensive scope of work. What their definition of extensive is a good guess, I would say, but probably something that, you know, really resembles, a sub rehab, kind of like for like replacement of aged components, whether it's mechanical or plumbing, whether it is building exterior items, windows, doors, siding, or if it's interior dwelling unit items such as appliances or finishes. You know, if it's something that's kind of, oh, this kind of looks like a sub rehab, lots of items, then the B108 would probably be appropriate for 223F in that scenario.
Yeah, that's a nice little point of clarification, because we do often get asked, hey, which form do we need to fill out? And then this is also, like I mentioned, a little bit of a change for your veterans that are used to filling out particular forms. So something to kind of talk about there. So now we've kind of gone through the front end process of the changes to the inspection, which is less of an e-tool approach, more of a JSI approach. We've talked about the CNA e-tool and how we still have to do a lot of it. We've talked a little bit about how the 2328 is incorporated into the e-tool. And we've touched on how new tax credits can impact how much of the e-tool needs to be completed. We talked about agreements and forms. So that kind of wraps up a lot of what goes on that's associated with the ARC and cost review that's not actually someone looking through plans. But another part of that process is the cost review. And that usually occurs after we've completed our inspection, we're looking through plans, costs have hit our desk. But there are a couple changes to the cost review. And in my opinion, they're both big, and they're both things you should be aware of. So Ryan, if you could hit on the two big changes to the cost process.
Yeah, sure. So one of the items would be applicable to Davis-Bacon wage rates. There was the all agency memorandum 236 that was released in mid-December, which adjusted the threshold for determination of split wages, basically from $1 million to $2.5 million. So that's big. In the past, we've had a lot of MAP projects, fall under a split wage decision, and it seems most of the time it's due to sort of the scope and the cost of the land improvements. So, HUD's kind of updated their thresholds there, which is big. You know, that jumping from $1 million to $2.5 million is huge to try to eliminate those split wage decisions that come back, which always happen at the very last minute and just, throws a wrench into the process. But the HUD's published some nice instructions on sort of how to determine that categories of construction, basically if any of the four categories of construction, total over $2.5 million, then a separate wage decision is going to be needed. So just increasing that threshold by that much, I think, will certainly cut back on those split wages that we see coming back that really, like I said, just kind of throw a wrinkle into everything at the last minute.
Absolutely. And as crazy as it sounds, when you're doing a mass overhaul or a mass rehab of a property, $1 million doesn't go that far. You know, when you're talking about some of the hardscapes, roofing, stuff like that, I mean, $1 million can get eaten up really quickly. And next thing you know, you're looking at a split wage decision and all the costs that you've been looking at and preparing for, planning for, underwriting, all changes, all in one swift decision. So I think that's big. I think that's a big one for sure. 241s kind of fall in the same ballpark. And we've seen a lot more of them lately, especially when you're talking about the advantages of a 241 when you are trying to, I won't say run from Davis-Bacon wage rates, but if you're doing a 241, which is on a previous, you know, HUD-insured 223F type deal, and you're adding to it, you can use the same wage rates that you use for the 223F using a 241. So a lot of times lenders will do a 223F, and then a couple years later do a 241. And in the past, all of our reporting, our Ark and Cost review, our CNA, our ESA, all that was really focused on the new addition. So whether that's units or clubhouse or amenities or whatever it may be, our focus was strictly on the new new addition to that property. Ryan, it sounds like things have changed a little bit, though, under the 2020 map guide, and that we may need to evaluate the existing building and existing property as well. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's the big change, is the evaluation of the existing improvements. You know, HUD wants to see kind of one single needs assessment e-tool for the application that takes into account existing improvements and whether or not any repairs and alterations need to be included in the scope of work for any new or proposed structures or addition. So it's really just kind of treating everything, you know, as one application, one e-tool, one needs assessment, as opposed to just looking at the addition, for example. And I know, you know, we've seen some projects come across our desk where the lender has gotten a waiver, you know, on the CNA of the existing structure, and it's, you know, really just taking into account the new structures that are going in. But now they've all gone out of the way to sort of provide that point of clarification where they want everything included under one application. So definitely something to keep in mind for 241s. And then back to your point about some of the cost changes too, the quote unquote major changes stipulation that was put in, you know, basically if costs change by more than 5% after firm commitment for whatever reason, you know, if it's value engineering or the scope of work has been contracted down and condensed a little bit, full reprocessing is going to be required. So again, that's between firm commitment and initial endorsement, greater than 5% cost increase. You know, we're going to have to go through this whole thing again, at least get the cost reviewed and approved, any construction documents updated with the changes. So that's a pretty big thing to keep in mind, you know, especially make sure your development teams are aware of that moving forward.
Yeah, that's really big. I mean, I see it all the time where, you know, things drag on a little longer than you expected. And next thing you know, the cost for lumber is through the roof, which happened last year in 2020. And that single element of the construction process could potentially change your cost by 5%. Something to keep in mind is, on average, construction costs increase 0.5% per month. So if it's taking you 6 months to a year to develop your scope and get everything finalized, get all your due diligence reporting done, get everything squared away with the municipality, you need to be planning to add an extra 5 or 6% to your cost just right off the bat if it's going to take that long. So that's a big one. There's going to be a lot of projects that get sent back to us to re-review in a panic because of this change to the map guide. So I'm really glad you brought that back up. I've kind of hit the end of the big things. I did want to mention one last time, which is a huge one, is that if you're doing a gut rehab on the old mill conversion or the hospital or the old industrial building, and you are going to treat it as a new construction for your underwriting, that is no longer an option. If it's an existing structure, regardless of the amount of work being done, it is now considered a sub-rehab. It kind of has to follow a different path. Probably not a huge impact to your underwriting, but it is an impact on our end for processing. Ryan, did you have anything else that jumped out at you from the map guide, from the 2020 map guide, that you'd like to talk about today?
Specific to Chapter 5, I do not. You know, again, we were kind of the lucky ones. And you know, for the most part, it is business as usual. You know, so hopefully we've provided some clarification, at least when it comes to, you know, the type of inspection you're going to need, how to process it, how costs are going to be presented, and, you know, just some additional points of clarification that hopefully can make this whole A&E review process easier.
Yeah, I do agree with you. I won't say you dodged the bullet necessarily, but you definitely weren't caught in the fire the way some of the other departments were. But I really appreciate your time today. Appreciate all your time and efforts put into this review so far. We have other podcasts that were recently recorded regarding the changes to energy. We have environmental changes coming up next. And then last, we're going to follow up with changes to the typical capital needs assessment process. So this has been the Drafting Table. This is Dominion Due Diligence Group. Have a good afternoon.